All right, welcome to Fast Cars, Fast Girls. I'm Abby Meyer, along with my co-host Mike Knapp. And this week, a little late for President's Day, but you know what? Always late, worth the wait, is what I say about myself. Doug is never late, but he is always worth the wait.
Well, I think
president.
I think my schedule got in the way of President's Day, so that's on me. So because we have been doing this as a President's thing.
We have. Well, you know what? And honestly, it was yours and my schedule.
Okay, so good. I don't feel as bad.
Yeah, no, right. Don't feel bad at all, because I only had maybe 3 days in February, and I sent Elisa right off the bat. I don't think it's going to happen before President's Day, and that's fine.
That's so good.
But anyhow, well, and it's heard your voice now,
my travel,
President Doug Bowles.
Thank you. My travel schedule in January, February, and March is worse than the rest of the year. It's kind of crazy, but by the time March ended, I figured out I spent the night somewhere other than home on 32 of those first 90 nights. So for me, that's more travel than the rest. Because by the time we open up here, I'm pretty much here. Or if I go to an IndyCar race, I'm in and out, right? So maybe it's two nights instead of a long period of time. So it's kind of weird. February this year was really busy.
Well, and then you were putting on a once-in-a-lifetime national phenomenon here that first time on the schedule, and who knows if it'll ever be back on the schedule, at least during your tenure. So that probably speeded up the spring a little bit as well.
It did a little bit. It also allowed us, so you're talking about the eclipse, what it allowed us to do is really get prepared in a lot of ways operationally, facility-wise, a lot earlier than we normally have. And it's funny, just walking around the building now, talking to everybody, and there's not the panic that sometimes you feel when you're 38 days away from the Indy 500. A lot of it's because we did a lot of our de-winterization early, you know, getting ready for folks to come in here. A lot of the grass prep to get the greenness going around the facility. We started early, so that's been pretty good. But you're right, it's 129 years from now, I think, that the next total solar eclipse comes across the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We think that'd be the 237th running of the Indy 500. So we're going to leave really good notes, and we'll put them away in some time capsule or whatever it is. And maybe whoever's here at the Speedway 129 years from now can pull out the notes and go, oh yeah, traffic was a problem. They had some concession lines that just go through the challenging.
Maybe they can outdo us.
And then go, hey, this was really cool. They partnered with Purdue and NASA and, you know, all the good and bad, and they can make it better.
Let's do that.
Well, my wife and I were here, and it was a phenomenal experience and a great day. You guys outdid yourself with that. So it was really
neat to be. It would have been fun to see it in your backyard, but it was really neat to see it with just so many different people, so many of whom have never been to the Speedway before. And they came with just sort of this, different approach. You know, they're not carrying a lot of their coolers. They didn't know exactly where they were going to sit. And you could just watch people look around and go, oh my gosh, this place is really big. What am I going to do? And then maybe my favorite moment of the day, I didn't watch from on the front stretch or the yard or the turn one, but we let people out on the track. And so I was kind of behind the normal IndyCar garages, and when the sun completely disappeared, the whole place cheered.
Yeah,
and then it got super quiet, and we played that sort of like Disney-esque standing in line for Space Mountain music, and how much fun it was. And then when the sun came back out, everybody cheered again. It was just really neat to be part of that.
Well, I've been coming here since 1979, and seeing people with blankets spread out on the main straightaway, and all that. So I just thought that this is like what the Speedway is for, is being just a part of the community. And I think that over the last however long, I think that's what it's become, is instead of, which was great at the time, but instead of a standalone place where, you know, it's sacred once a year, this is what we do. Now it's a real part of the whole community, and all the events that you guys do is what makes it even more of a special place, I think.
And I think one of the things, and Roger believes this as well, it's a community asset. And at some level, you know, we have to try and use it for things like that. So obviously during COVID, we had the Speedway High School got to drive around and walk across the yard bricks, you know, to graduate. And an IMPD police officer, we held a funeral for her out here because you couldn't have a funeral somewhere else.
That was so cool.
And we continue with like Speedway High School to let their seniors come out and do their senior class photo and just things like that. It just is important for us to engage in the community.
Now I'm sad. I'm as old as I am.
It's frightening, right?
I stout on that.
Yeah, it's.
But you know what?
Time goes fast.
I say, well, I got to get in under the community day when you could still drive your car around the track. So
that's a question we get all the time: is when you're going to do that again? And the festival really was who was in charge of that. And the festival used it as a way to raise money for the festival, and then it got just to be a bigger challenge for them. And then now community day, we sort of take drivers out in and about the community.
Into the community. Yeah. We make it truer community day. But yeah, no, I was actually going to say, so, you know, my apartment's not far from here.
Yep.
We could actually hear the cheers And I knew it immediately because I know how the sounds from the track sound, you know, from my backyard. And because I didn't make it over that day. And so I was with the dog watching. And as soon as it went dark, I heard this huge, and I was like, yeah, that's the Speedway.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
It was a really, really neat moment to see that and hear that and be part of it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's something that seems so simple, you know, like, okay, the moon's going to block the sun. It's going to be dark for a couple minutes, like whoop-de-deal. Like it gets dark every night, but you know, it's like if you had snow in July, like, okay, yeah, we've seen the sun get dark before, right, but like not like this. And just to have, you know, and also to have so many people looking at the same thing at the same time, mm-hmm, just that thought of how many people across, you know, the state of Indiana, across the United States, were all doing the exact same thing, yep, and thinking to themselves, how cool is this?
That was kind of one of the things that we were really surprised at, is how much attention people just from everywhere wanted to come to be part of this one particular thing. And we had so much media coverage, and the number of national broadcast teams that came here for that day. So NBC Nightly News and CBS Nightly News both had their anchors here at the Speedway doing the nightly news. And we were, after the eclipse was over, and we all were sitting around talking at one point, we said, when's the last time? We couldn't think of the last time that more than nightly anchors go all over, you know, CBS, ABC, NBC, Fox on their own. But when's the last time you can think of an event where the nightly news took their main anchors and more than one of them was at the same location for the same time for something that was good news? Mm-hmm. Normally, they show up when a disaster's happened or a school, sure, shooting or some terrible thing.
Right.
And then to have both of them standing here basically right next to each other doing the nightly news for a really cool reason that we all came together to celebrate something, not came together to mourn something. It was pretty cool.
And you know it's a big deal when Jim Cantore shows up.
So I had so much fun with him. He was such a great
guy. He is the best.
He was such a great guy.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if you saw, he ended his on-air part and took a drink of milk and then poured it on him. And I know that's a tough subject, right? I mean, we all believe in the drinking the milk, and then we split our ways on whether you should dump it on yourself or not. And that's a fun argument to watch on social. But he poured it on himself. And I looked.
I'm on the camp of when you win the race, you kind of get to do whatever you want.
So I am too. But we can talk about that in a minute. but I'm kind of in that camp too. But Jim Cantore was so excited. He did that. And I was like, and I gave him a high five. And I said, you have a change of clothes, right? And he said, no. I said, man, you're in trouble. So I went over to the gift store and we bought him a long sleeve. This is May.
Oh yeah.
500 shirt. And then, so he takes his shirt off in pit lane, puts that shirt on, goes, here, you can have this. And he threw me his Weather Channel shirt, and I threw it in my bag, and it took me like 3 days before I opened my bag up. I opened my bag up at home, and it smelled really bad. And the shirt is completely stiff from dried milk all over it. But back to the argument, it's interesting how people are. Oh, that's not respectful. The milk's meant to be meant to drink it. Don't pour it on yourself. And I completely get that. I mean, there is something about that. But what I love about race car drivers, and especially, I mean, Sato really, well, Weldon did a little bit. I mean, really celebrated by going out and laying down the bricks. But then Sato won by being crazy. Will Power was crazy. I mean, everybody's kind of had their own thing and just celebrate with just this relief that they've won the Indy 500 and excitement that they've won. It's like the greatest moment of their life. And it's just almost automatic. They just are, their arms are flailing and they pour it on themselves.
I feel like it's a instinctual. I don't know that they necessarily think to themselves what they would do.
Right.
Or maybe they do, but in that moment, I think that it's just pure instinct.
Yep.
Whether they drink and pass or drink and dump. And
I think that's exactly what happens. And they just celebrate. And that's the best part. Right?
Oh,
I love the
fact. Because it's just that pure emotion.
Right.
Just that raw. I mean, and that's what you love about it, is that you feel like you're there with them.
100%.
Oh.
And for me, it's, you know, I'm fine with it. If that's how you want to celebrate because you just won the greatest race in the world, then you celebrate the way you want to. If you just want to have
as
a drink.
It's not orange juice.
Well, we know what happens when that happens. And then the day of social media, that would not be pretty. It would be a really pretty ugly day.
Can you imagine?
No, Emerson's lucky there was not social media. And I think he'd tell you today he wishes he hadn't done that.
I mean, honestly, and I might catch some flack for this, I personally don't care that he drank orange juice. Like, I get it. Some people don't like milk. Like, I don't think it was as big of a deal as everybody made it out to be, but it certainly is funny to make jokes about.
Yeah, he's coming back in May, so maybe somebody will grab him and can ask him about it.
Right, we should. We should ask him about it.
I'd love to talk to him just because back then he was one of my favorites. I mean,
how could you not be? He could have.
And realistically, he could have won this race 5 times. He
for sure.
He had a couple of times. Well, I mean, crashing in front of Little Al.
Yeah.
With a lap lead, lost a gearbox one time when he was near the lead. I think he had another issue another time. I mean, you know, you look at that small period of time he was here and what he did and also what he could have done.
Yep.
You know, he's just one of the all-time greats ever here.
Well, and you think about the big deal we made about Alonso coming. I mean, Emerson Fittipaldi is a world champion. He came to race here. He decided to become an IndyCar driver, right? Yeah. It was Nigel Mansell-like. I mean, it's you really think about what a big – if social media had been around back in that day, the whole internet would have broken that Emerson Fittipaldi was going to come run in the Indy 500 and then ultimately the IndyCar series.
So. And driving a pink car.
I know. A lot of people don't realize that, right? He didn't come over and get with Ganassi or Penske right away. He came over and ran in a back marker and somehow decided he liked it and stayed around.
Yeah.
I love that. I'll tell you what, speaking of the Fittipaldis, I am so excited about Pietro this year. It's fun to have him back. I feel like, you know, he's a couple of years older, a little more mature, which is always nice on IndyCar drivers just because, you know.
It's true. Yep.
A little more maturity always looks good on our drivers. And he just really seems to have a good attitude and excitement about this season. I'm excited to see what he does.
I think across the board, the series has a lot of great personalities like that. You just feel really good about the drivers we have and who they are and what they're about. And the stories behind them are pretty diverse. So you've got some pretty good reasons to like different people and root against somebody else. And I mean, the series is doing a great job. And that's another perfect example. Somebody that was here and now has come back and has got another opportunity.
Yeah. No, absolutely awesome.
But, you know, you look at maturity, it's really crazy. And I mean, I don't want to ever let people know what I was doing when I was 19, 20, 21 years old. Right. But it's just...
Sometimes I don't want them to know what I'm doing at 57.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Me too. But it's amazing to... You always... I think there was a little stretch where we maybe worried about who was going to be next after this group of, you know, guys that are in their 30s and 40s. And now we know that we've got, but just how good they are at such young ages.
Yep.
And now, especially when you take the guys like Pato or like Colton Herta, who were 19 and 20, and now they're 23, 24, 25, and they're even better. Just what do you think about that heading into May and just the sheer amount of talent that there were beginning to see up and down the field?
Well, you hear the drivers talk about all the time that the competitiveness of the series is at an all-time high. And I think that's not just hyperbole. I think that's really true, that is in fact the case. And we do have a lot of great young drivers. Pato O'Ward is our number one merch seller. He is if you use that as the metric, he's the most popular driver we have. And it's not just because of the on track, it's because of the personality off track.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
absolutely.
He's sort of got that whole package, which is really fun to see. So as you see those drivers sort of growing into those spaces, I think you worry less and less about the day that Scott Dixon isn't here or, you know, pick some of those drivers that are, you know, Elio's now just running one race a year, TK's not running with us. Some of those folks that you could just count on for the last two decades. I feel better. And like I said, especially with somebody like a Pato who's a top seller, and you look around, plus you put him with the McLaren brand, which that McLaren brand has a lot of interest from people beyond the racing side. I mean, it's a pretty cool combination in that one for sure.
It really is. Well, and Pato is also a driver that even at this age, I can see him later on, once he's no longer driving, still being an excellent ambassador to the sport, being like Mario is right now. You know, he absolutely has that personality and that draw and just that ability to connect with people.
Yes.
You know, and not everybody has that ability to, when they're talking to you, make you feel like you're the only person in the room. And he's one of those guys that, like, you can hone right in, and you are the most important person in Pato's world right then.
We just did a fan fest thing at the Bottle Works here downtown last week with Pato, and he's amazing. I mean, he's great with the fans. He's got that high energy, almost Elio-like, right? It's not like, I have to be here and sign your autograph. It's like, I'm here, and I'm going
to
give you
everything I've got. I get to sign these autographs for you guys.
and that's pretty cool to see that. And you know, like Alex Palou, the fact that Alex Palou decided to stay here and not go somewhere else was another great driver, unbelievably talented. Some people might argue he's the most talented open wheel driver on the face of the planet at the moment. And you know, there's just some pretty neat things on the on that side of the IndyCar series that are on their way up versus really guys who are getting ready to leave.
Well, we've got so many ovals. Sorry, I'll let you go right back. Yeah. I was just going to say, we've got so many ovals on the schedule this year too. I love my ovals and I attend them, as should everybody.
Yes.
Quit saying you want ovals and then not going to damn ovals. But I love that we've got more ovals, because I think that it really is going to challenge, you know, like Pelot has been very dominant on other types of courses, but has not necessarily been dominant on ovals. Right. You know, Newgarden, we know he's going to be a force to be reckoned with on every oval. Yeah, Doesn't matter. Big, small.
I think Alex just needs to get a couple of those wins and I think he'll be fine. I mean, he's good here.
Oh, he is.
I mean, he's had a couple of things that have kept him from being in the winner's circle here. He obviously knows how to be really, really fast around this place. And I just think it's, you know, it's maybe kind of like Pato is right now. He's gotten so many seconds that the series ought to look out. The minute Pato wins a race again, it may be a string of races he wins. And I think Alex is probably the same way on an oval. But Joseph definitely is the oval king at the moment.
He certainly is.
Well, if you're talking being fast around here, Alex turned the first 235 mile an hour lap in quite some time.
Oh, that's true.
Lighter cars, a little bit different tech. There's some discussion going on. What do you think is a track record a possibility?
It's funny. I think we'll be faster. A lot of it's going to depend on weather, right? So so much of it's weather dependent. How's the wind? How's the temperature? So I think we have to see where that lands. I definitely think we'll be faster. And I was in the camp when the delay for the hybrid was coming. I actually called Roger and said, hey, can we leave the lighter components on the car? Because that'll be awesome in May. And one of the great things about May is speed. And we could have a chance of breaking a track record. And then Roger was all in on that. And so fortunately, we're here, you know, 30 pounds lighter or so for May. But then talking with drivers, I think they all believe it's definitely going to be faster. But I think they're concerned about actually that it's 237 miles an hour single lap. Now, obviously, 236 for the four. It's going to be hard. I think I looked at it the other day. It's between 3 and 4 tenths of a second per lap. So when you think about it, it doesn't seem like a lot. But when you're in those 38 second laps, you know, 3 tenths of a second is a lot. But
well, and when you're going into, you know, turn 1 and 3 at 242, as opposed to you probably have to go in at 246, 47 probably to even all of that out. So that's
it's going to be interesting. And I think the 235 thing, obviously, you're going to see a lot more of that. But it would be really cool. Ideally for me, I would love for Ari's 237 lap to remain the single lap track record, just to pay tribute to that age until we're really there. And then the 4 lap track record fall and have, you know, somebody have a new 4 lap track record. It'd be pretty fun.
Will you have some sort of homage to Tom Carnegie?
So we've talked internally about, do you have Dave Klabber say it, or do you just have it queued up? Yeah, and you just push the button, and people know as soon as they hear that voice, and we'll see what we do.
I mean, I love Dave. Don't get me wrong, I do love Dave. Tom Carnegie would have missed announcing the qualifications.
You know, and
I love you, Dave.
And the other thing about Dave is, I mean, Dave learned under Tom, right? So I mean, Dave has an awful lot of respect for Tom.
Yeah,
so, I don't know. We'll see what we do.
Yeah.
But we've talked about it. It could be fun. Well, you got to see how fast they end up going.
So. Yeah. Well, and obviously, I mean, I can't wait to see the photo ops with Ari, just because, I mean, he's such a cool guy.
He is.
And yeah, I mean, he's ready to see somebody break one of those records.
I'm sure he'd like to keep one.
Yeah. I mean, not both. That's what, just one. Know,
it'd be nice if you could have one. And then
if he could keep the single, I'm with you. Keep the single. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know, if they both fall, he's still a 2-time Indy 500 winner. Nobody's taking that away. And some of the greatest hair of all time.
Oh,
and another guy we talk about back in that era with Emerson, another guy who just knew how to get around here. And I one of my favorite, I forget what year it was, Nari was qualifying, and I forget who was doing the track announcing at the time, but he described him going through turn three, and he was like, you know, a classic Indianapolis Motor Speedway line. And it's just like that. I just kind of got the shivers when I thought about, you know, just hearing that, and somebody who had seen racing for so long, and then to say that about Ari, because, you know, he didn't win a lot of races other places, but he got it done here.
Yeah. No, he was definitely good here. And at some level, you know, it's all that matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that is, this, you live forever if you win here.
Right. I was saying, it's all that matters. He won the first 500 I went to. So
that's like, cool. Yeah.
He is immortalized in my mind for at least.
Yeah. And Rick Mears won the first one I ever went to.
So. And AJ won my first one. So we all got some pretty iconic folks that picked the first race.
Speaking of AJ, and I'm not going to drop any names or anything else. I don't break any rules, but I came across somebody in my other job in the last week that happens to have the pace car from 1967 in their garage.
Good deal. Yeah.
And yeah, anyhow, I was like, no kidding. They had, and so they start telling me about all the different cars they had, and they had all kinds of cool cars. They had a really cool looking Corvair, but
dangerous in any speed, the Corvair.
Yes, it is. But yeah, they had the 1967 pace car. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. Cause I came in and I go by AJ in my professional, in my other job.
Yes.
And so he said, oh, AJ. You know, I've got the pace car from, you know, and he goes, I bet you don't even. And I said, oh, don't even.
Don't, yeah.
I said, I'm the wrong person to think that I don't know who you're talking about.
Yeah. That's great.
I said, I've got the program at home, so.
Yeah, that would be a pretty priceless item there. Rutherford just sold his event car from his win in 80.
Wow.
That was a sweet car.
Yeah, it was a really great car.
Yeah.
And it went for $90,000 or something.
I believe it.
Before the buyer's premium, so you're really out $100 or $100,000 for that car.
Yeah. He has the absolute nicest signature and handwriting.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's a work of art.
It is. He's an artist, you know, so that's part of why that is. He did our program cover a couple of years ago. He's got some unbelievable artwork. He is, and he still does some of it. I got a chance to go down there. Carter and I went down there, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks ago to do a little thing with him because we did the bronze and silver badge in honor of his 50th anniversary of his first win. And we went
another beautiful car, by the way.
Yeah, that McLaren was such a great car. And then got a chance to just go in and see his place. But he's got artwork and things that he's done around his house, but he's really talented. So that signature fits perfectly for the artist that he is.
That makes sense. I did not realize, I didn't know what an artist he was. Yes. I'd forgotten about the program and just hadn't clicked in my head.
Yeah, he's a really great artist. So, but yeah, it's a beautiful signature.
Oh, beautiful signature. I mean, it doesn't matter what he's signing. It could be a hat, the bill of it, the brim, turning. It's still just perfect.
And you have people that do an autograph like this and they're done. Yeah, it's real quick. And he just takes his time. And I've got a frame in the little hallway that leads into my office that the Sports Illustrated with him on it after winning the 500 that he signed to me. And it's just super cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
But it's that beautiful signature.
Yeah.
I had a book. There's just like a coffee table book from 91 for the 75th anniversary. And for the 100th, I brought it to the autograph session and got his signature of it. And it's
a beautiful signature.
It really is. All right. Obviously, outside of May, IndyCar race that you're most excited about that you think might, and I'll say this because I know it's hard to choose because you know all the other track guys. And so I'll say, which race do you think might give us the best chance for a surprise winner?
Well, anymore, who knows, right?
It's
so competitive, you just don't know. And then
especially with Nashville being the finale.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one. And although you would put all your money on Joseph probably right now, let's see what happens the rest of the year. I'm excited to go back to Milwaukee.
Oh,
I don't know what kind of racing it's going to produce. I hope it's good. My first IndyCar race outside of the Speedway was in Milwaukee when I went. And it's just kind of a racing town. The history of the track's older than we are. I mean, it's the one track on our circuit. It's not as continuous operating like we have, but I think it's like 1906 or something. So it's a little bit older than we are. Just really cool to go back there. And Roger's so excited about it. It's neat to see the energy and the excitement that he has. So looking forward to that one. Beth and I usually take the camper to Iowa, and that's always fun because we go for the racing, but then we also wander around and watch people drink and have a good time and listen to music that I don't know who the artists are, but it's fine. She does. So that's that's good. So those two are probably the ones I'm looking forward to the most is Milwaukee and going back to Iowa.
Excellent. Excellent. I love Iowa. I really want to go to Iowa this year. I'm going to have to do some creative scheduling, but it's marked on the calendar as like, I make up my own little paper calendar when I'm combining my work schedule and my race schedule. And RO for request off is on the Iowa days. So.
And one thing
planning on going, but
one thing I'd recommend to anybody is to take a trip on Saturday night down to Knoxville. I went down there for the first time last summer, and that was
but not the Nationals, but just to Knoxville to see it. Yeah, because they
said for a night racing,
and it's during Iowa, which is 100% right. So I was going to do that last year or 2 years ago. I can't remember. We were going to do it, and it rained. It was one of those nights, you know, where it rained, and so we thought we're not going to. I'd love to go.
2 years ago.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. I went last year,
and everybody's stuck. Even though it's not Knoxville Nationals, it's still going to Knoxville, and the history of that place too would be. And I'm such a short track fan anyway, so I love to get to as many short tracks as you can. And really, what it's that the drives 8 hours to Iowa, something like that. It's not
for me. So.
It's not. Yeah, it's not bad, right? Yeah. I mean, it's and you can.
And it's an easy drive, honestly.
Not bad. Yeah, it's not bad at all.
Yeah.
So it's a great race. So I will have to try and get to Knoxville then, because that's definitely a place I want to go see.
Yeah, it definitely had a little bit of a IMS feel to it in a sense, because it's been there so long and has the Hall of Fame there. Yep. And I parked in some guy's side yard and walked
great.
The four blocks over and did all that kind of stuff. So it really had that kind of, and just, I was really surprised that it was just Saturday night of racing, just how many people were there.
Right.
It's, you know, outside of the Nationals and everything, it's still a big deal.
Yeah. No, everybody talks about Knoxville. So I'd love to go see it. I'd love to see the Nationals sometime too. That would be really cool to do.
Yeah, I agree.
And they go fast.
Yes.
They go fast.
Yeah.
All right. So we got all kinds of things coming up here at the IMS.
Yeah.
Obviously, we got the month of May creeping up. We've got Rev. Well, the Mini and Rev kicking off the month.
Yep. And we're on track right now as we film or as we tape this. We've got 20 days of BMW on track. We just got done with the Eclipse, obviously, the Shell Eco Marathon, where we brought kids in from all over university and high school kids from all over the world to compete in a fuel mileage challenge, basically is what it is. So we've been crazy already. And then you're right, you get into May, you've got the Mini and Rev to really kind of kick things off. Then you got the Sancio Grand Prix, then we roll right into everything for the Indy 500. And then we sort of clean up a little bit here. I think we have Detroit the following weekend for IndyCar. So we'll our ticket team does the ticketing for Detroit. So we're still pretty involved in how that works. And then we got a whole host of things through the summer and Brickyard on the Oval, which will be interesting to have them back on the Oval this year.
It will be.
So that's going to be a good one. I hope ticket sales for that are better than they've been in the last 15 years, which is crazy because people got to the point where they just didn't want us to be on the Oval. Now we're back on the Oval. People are like, thank God you're back on the Oval. Well, we'll see. Hopefully it'll be good racing, right?
I mean, you know, the worst thing you can do for a race fan is give us exactly what we ask for.
Well, that's what we try to do, though.
I know, but we don't know what we want collectively as a
group. Right.
The thing is, we're hungry and we don't know what we want, but we know what we don't want.
Right. But sometimes I'm a race fan too, but sometimes we don't know what we don't want until after we've gotten something. We're like, well, I didn't want that. But
right, that's true. You know, that is just like,
we
you
wait
know
to see what
I should have been more particular.
Yeah. So, but no, I'm May is going to be great. Having Kyle Larson run is going to be really fun.
Yeah. I always enjoy when we have drivers that bring crossover fans and new eyes, new excitement.
I think that'll be really fun to have him. He's been great in terms of, you know, the way he talks about the 500 and just kind of the methodical in the way that he's learning through things. You have some great teammates. I did say to Pato the other night I said, hey, look, I'm really excited Kyle's here, but don't let him beat you. You know, I want Kyle to come here. I want him to have a great Indy 500, but I want a regular to win. You know, for
right,
me,
yeah.
you want a true IndyCar guy to win it. And that's that if he won it, he will have done it because he deserved it. But
certainly.
He's been great. I'm really excited about having him. And the one thing I love about short track drivers, and we saw it when Brian Clausen was here, the number of short track fans that show up in their short track shirts, is really cool to me. And that's getting grassroots folks to come back to the Speedway. And I think Kyle will help that, as well as some of the diehard NASCAR fans who may not have checked out the Indy 500 before.
Mm-hmm. But we'll be a little more interested now that,
things be really good.
Now they've got a little skin in the game.
Yeah.
So if you think of an event that's never been here, so I'll you know, say F1 isn't in this, but think of an event that's never been here. What would you like to see at the Speedway someday?
That's a great question, and I don't know that I have a really good answer for that. You know, obviously we're still grade one in the event, an F1 opportunity was to ever come up again. It's just too cost prohibitive. I mean, the amount of money that it costs to pay Liberty to have them come here right now is too challenging. Although I think having the Formula One race here is appropriate. We've talked about, do you pair WEC with IMSA, which is the World Endurance Challenge, which is basically IMSA everywhere, but in the US. So that's something that we might that we might bring here. But I kind of like our mix right now. You know, you've got Indy cars both on the road course and the oval. At some level, I'm glad we don't have a second road course race, although I love the doubleheader weekend where NASCAR and IndyCar was together. But I was at a point where I thought that if we ended up having to have IndyCar back as part of that, I'd love to change the layout so that at least it made something a little different than the same layout that they do in May. You know, we have our vintage race here in June. Brickyard with is July. We've got the dirt track and sports cars in September. And then we have our Indy 8-hour sports car race in October. So I think we've got a pretty good schedule across the board. So I don't know if it's not Formula One or WEC. I don't know what the... You know, our fans would tell me it's the Freedom 100.
Yeah,
I mean, the two questions I get more than any are, what do you do the rest of the year? Because they think the 500 is all. And then the other one is, when's the Freedom 100 coming back? So, you know, that someday I'd love to see it back here. I understand, you know, why we've kind of put it on the shelf for the time being, just trying to get the drivers in those cars some oval experience before they come here. It's so fast.
Yeah.
But I think we need to make it a priority to get them that experience so that we can bring the Freedom 100 back someday. So let's just continue to work on that.
I do too. I mean, the Freedom 100 is some of the best racing. Like, there have been so many close finishes.
Yep.
And I'm obsessed with the Turn 2 suites. I know they're the older suites, but they're the best because they're so close to the track. Freedom 100, you feel like you could touch the car.
Yeah. Well, you touch on, I mean, if somebody's out listening and they got a buddy that invites them to come to a practice day in a Turn 2 suite, 100% do whatever you can to go take that time in the suite, because you're right. It's crazy.
It's crazy how close you are
right there. It was built in the middle 70s and you're looking right down on the race cars and the noise and the speed, the sense of speed as they are exiting Turn 2 and coming at you because they've already apexed. So they're coming to the exit apex. It's a spectacle. I couldn't watch the whole race from there. It would drive.
I'd have a knot in my stomach. Well, and also because that tends to be just with how the track is situated. If there's any kind of wind gust, that's where everybody stuffs it into the wall.
Right.
And so, yeah, I've been there also when a car has crashed there, and it's terrifying for a second.
Somebody posted a video a couple years ago, video, where he's just talking, you know, it's a selfie video, and he's just standing there talking about how excited he used to be at Speedway, and somebody crashes behind him, his face, and he's like, oh, and I think foul language comes out of his mouth. It's a fantastic video to see, but it's because he's excited, he's right there in the craziness, and you almost feel the impact when you're there. You're so close. Yeah, it's crazy.
And it's just like sitting in right above turn one, which I love those seats.
Yep.
And my goal is to someday see a 500 from there. But it's almost the same thing because the way the seats are angled and everything, you're almost looking right down over.
Right down.
Those to me are the best seats in the whole building. So
funny, I get that question all the time. What are the best seats? And I'm like, I call customers every night and it doesn't matter where they sit. They think they have the best seats in the house, which is really awesome because the seats are, it's about what you see, but it's also about where you park, who you sit with, where you sat the first time you came. I mean, all those things go into deciding where the best seats are. But if you push me and it's like, you got to pick, I would tell you it's the top of turn one somewhere, up high in turn one or up high in turn four. I mean, there's just something spectacular about those locations, but turn one is probably the
best. I would say also high in turn three.
So all the turns are good, right? If you're high up in the turns and I actually just did an interview this week with a group of papers that does like Bloomington and Terre Haute and some other papers. And they're doing a piece on the different corners. And do they have their personalities, not just on the track, but is there a personality in the grandstands? How are they different?
So absolutely.
There's contrast. And you talk about turn three. And the thing I talked about turn three that's so great about turn three is the terminal velocity. You think typically the wind's coming from the south to the north. So going into turn three is where you see those 245 mile an hour speeds. And then there's this weird thing, you come out of turn two, and unlike the front stretch where it stays really tight the whole way, you come out of turn two and it just widens up. So that's when we see all those four and five wide fanning out down the, and then I think drivers forget, and then they get to the end and they go, oh, I got to get all the way back to that one groove. And so there's something about turn three that's exciting to watch that whole craziness on the back.
It is. Well, and since it's, you know, there's not pit lane there, there's not the pagoda there, there's not all the suites on the inside, you can see so far down.
Yep.
I mean, you can see clear to turn two. So yeah, that's where, if we didn't live at the polar opposite end of turn three, and that's what I always tell people when they ask me, you know, what are the best seats? I said, okay, so first you got to figure out where are you parking?
Right.
Because where you're sitting is extremely relative to where you're parking.
Yeah.
Like where you're going to enjoy sitting. And I know that I can never get my family to go there because my mom's not going to walk that far.
Well, she's
been very clear about that.
If you walked in gate one right here by turn one, the main gate, and had to walk to your seats in turn three, you're walking around the outside of the racetrack, right? Or you, I guess you could walk through the infield and under the tunnel, but just walking around the outside, you're probably, let's think about that. That's half a mile, another, it's 2 miles easy.
Oh, yeah.
From here to those seats.
No, it is right. It's right about 2 miles from my mom's house because Molly and I did it for the air raid.
Okay. To turn four, though, or to turn three. Okay.
Because, you know, she's a runner. So,
yeah.
Like, we can do it.
Yeah, sure. No, I would have
I mean, that was one of those days that afterwards, like, I look at the fitness monitor tracker and I'm so like,
So you had the 5/8 mile front stretch, you got a 1/4 mile turn, another 1/8 mile, then you're at the grandstand. And then whatever you've got right here and a little bit out. Yeah, so you're probably a mile, probably a mile and a 1/4 mile and a half from here.
And then
whatever you've got. Yeah. But it's and that's okay in the morning.
Yeah.
Right? it's always much better the way there.
Yeah, the full day in the sun and a couple of beverages and a bunch of people, that's a long way home.
You know, the number of times that I have left this facility and have said to my friends, judge me if you want, but I'm getting a taxi. And, you know, then Lyft and Uber came along, although now where they pick you up, by that point, I might as well just walk the rest of the way back to my mom's house. But yeah, I remember there was one year that I did try to hail a cab on 16th Street.
That's funny.
My friend said, you are not. I said, I can't walk anymore. Can't do it. I'm not going to make it. I'm too high.
Well, that's what I'm happy about is I've worked my way up in the Southwest Vista. So
okay.
I'm like 2 rows from the top. So probably, you know, the first quarter of the race, the sun gets behind there and I'm in the shade. So I'm like, I really don't want to change.
Yeah.
My only one is I hope to get into the last row. That's what I keep going up and asking every year, just because you can put your stuff behind you.
Right. Yeah. There's a space back there.
So, but yeah, it took me a long time to finally get up there, but I'm more than happy with and I think that's the way it works with a lot of people is
to finally get to where they want
through the
to get up high enough, or you get to an aisle that you want to have. And then you say, these are our seats. Yep. This is where, and a lot of people, and they're like, hey, these are the seats that my grandpa brought me. I don't want to leave them because this is where we sat.
Nostalgic. Yeah. And this is, yeah.
So as far as you know, then bringing that up, what's the longest somebody's had tickets up to?
We've got a bunch of customers who are, this will be over 75 races for them.
Yeah.
It's amazing how many of those, you know, I had the one customer who passed away a couple of years ago who'd been to over 90.
Yeah.
I think I remember there was something about him.
It's pretty impressive the number of people that are north of 60 for sure.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that are over 75. One of the things I try and do on race day is if I know somebody's hit their 75th anniversary or 75th race, I try and go say hello to them during the race.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's just fun to say thanks.
Well, yeah.
And usually they've got a kid there who's my age, and then they've got a grandkid, and then maybe even a great, you know, it's just the generations of families. It's pretty fun to see.
That is very cool. Yeah.
And it's crazy to think, because I mean, this year will be my 25th.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I missed a few here and there. I haven't missed one since 2009.
Right.
Yeah. And my goal's 50. I mean, I'll be 79 years old at the time, but that's my goal.
Right.
And I couldn't hardly imagine what it'd be like to have gone, especially, I don't feel like since I got here in the late 70s, the speeds have gone up and the cars have sort of changed, but not, you know, you go back 75 years and just the evolution of the cars and to have been able to have been here to see that, would love to have conversations.
The 60s and like 70s, just the change year over year, really, would have been fascinating. You know, I started kind of just, like I said, a couple of years ahead of you, but I followed the racing as far back as I can remember. And then the middle 70s were the same, right? And even in the 80s, when I'd, you know, get my auto week at home and you go to the back of the auto week to see that somebody's got a photo of the new March or the new Lola or something and how it was going to change year over year. And we don't see that as much now. And, you know, that's just all of us, right? We all look back and go, oh, that was the romantic age.
Right.
Need to do that again. You know, I hear from the old guys that are like, the roadsters need to come back. And, you know, the folks that are falling in love with the sport today, 25 years from now, are going to say, the era of Pato O'Ward and Alex Palou and Joseph Newgarden, that was it. And what's so cool about the sport.
It is. Well, and you know what's funny is, so I got into the sport right after the split. So like in the dark days.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
but I didn't know any different.
Right.
So, you know, coming in with no expectations, these were still super cool, super fast
sure.
cars.
Yes.
And it was yeah. still super exciting. Yeah. Like, I was still hooked. And so, like, once I got old enough to, like, know about the split, and people were like, oh, that wasn't good racing. And I'm like, seemed fine to me. You know?
Right.
Like, I had a great, and actually, my first race was in Southwest Vista. So that's got some nostalgia for me. And speaking of the different turns, where we sat, it was this whole section that somebody from my mom's hometown got like 20 tickets. And it ended up being, it was friends of her parents. And right. so then it was their kids that were managing it at that point. I mean, it was like 20 or 30 tickets in this section.
Yeah.
And there was one guy who was not with our group, but came every year. And when they would play Stars and Stripes Forever, he would stand up, turn and face the crowd, because he was in the front row of the first section of Southwest Vista, and he would raise up like he was the conductor, and he would conduct the entire song.
That's
and he was oh, it was hysterical. It was so funny. And he must have actually been a music director, because he knew every cue.
Right.
Like, I mean, it wasn't like he was just up there farting around.
Yeah.
Like, he legitimately conducted the entire song, and oh, it was fantastic. And my mom, he had been doing it for a long time, because when I saw it, she goes, oh, I can't believe this guy's still here. He used to do this when I came.
But that's what's neat about this. The place is so big that for that, the folks that sat in that section, probably that's part of the tradition of the event, right? When's the guy going to stand up and conduct from the first row the Stars and Stripes Forever? Each area has sort of a character or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, their own.
And that's what makes it. That makes it so special. And I'm sure the year that people got there, like, where's the guy? Where's
our right? Yeah, the first year that he was gone.
Yeah, it's terrible to lose that. And I don't know. Do we still play Stars? I don't think we play it anymore. I don't think we do. No, we should probably bring that back. Donald would be happy we brought that back. Donald Davidson.
That's true. I know the pretty yeah. man knows it, because they always know Susan. Oh,
for sure. And I think about, you know, now that you say that, I just remember that as a kid coming to my first races and happy. It was just part of it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it also just feels very Memorial Day-ish, too. Like, you feel like you should hear that song in every Memorial Day parade.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the one thing I think we do a good job of, though, of celebrating men and women who serve.
Oh, absolutely.
And then those who pay the ultimate sacrifice as Memorial Day weekend. I think that's still, I mean, that's, other than back home again in Indiana, probably my favorite moment is when the military men and women march down, and then how taps the whole place.
It's just, you can
yeah, pin drop. Just gets quiet. Yeah.
It's
pretty wild, right?
Hear 350,000 people hush.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Well, I think that's all the stuff that makes, and you know, and I'm not being critical of it at all, but you know, I've gone to like the Daytona 500 yep. and I had fun, and I'd love to go see it again, and it is a big deal, but it just, and I've gone to other NASCAR races, so it just feels like a NASCAR race. But when you come to the 500, that's the, you know, because I mean, we've all been to, I've been to 40, 50 other IndyCar races, but this one, just there's just something about it that there's an electricity that you really can't understand unless you've been here.
Correct. And that's, when people say, what's it like? It's like, I don't know how to tell you what it's like.
There's no way to describe it.
You
just
can't.
Have to experience
it. And it's not a race. It's an event. The Daytona 500 is a race, and it's a great race. And I've been to, and it's a really fun race to go to. And there's an elevated excitement of that race versus a traditional, you know, regular IndyCar, regular NASCAR race. I mean, that clearly is a big one. But it's not an event, where this one is just, it's a race. It's really an event that just happens to have a race going, and that's part of what makes it so special. There's just so much else is going on, and like when people say, "How do you describe it?" Yeah, so you know that time when you're sitting on the beach and you see this unbelievable sunset, and you're like, "Wow, that's awesome! I'm gonna take a picture," and you're gonna send it to your buddies, and you look at it and you go, "It's a picture." You have to be there to experience that sunset, just like you have to be here. We can send you all the pictures in the world, all the video. It just doesn't do what coming here does to see it live.
Yeah.
That's the best.
Yeah.
That's the best analogy I have to kind of explain to people how
analogy.
You can.
Well, and you know, I think it says a lot that local people, we don't say, what are you doing on Memorial weekend? We say, what are you doing on race weekend?
Right, right.
And everybody knows what race you're referring to.
For sure.
We have multiple races here all throughout the year. We have multiple racetracks around here.
Yep.
You know, like NHRA out at the Big Go.
Yeah.
You know, like there are big races that come outside, but everybody said, you say race weekend, we know you mean the 500. It is a a whole event.
For sure. It's definitely an event.
Well, and to go back to something I was going to say earlier when you were talking about some of the, like, Pato and the way he approaches the fans, I think a really cool element to a lot of the drivers is the fact that they live here.
Yep.
And they get it, and they know. It's one thing to know what May is like, but then it's also another thing to know how it just fits into the rest of the year. You look at Pacer games, and when you get, you know.
100 days out with the players was so cool, packing, doing the food,
No, I think that's right, and I think for them, too, to be in a community where people know them, and where I'm sure at some level if they want to go out and don't want to be picked on, there's probably that side. But the other side of it for them too is to go, I do something really cool. Mm-hmm. I race in this really cool race in this really cool series, and people know it and want to come up and say hello to me. So I do think I think that makes it special for them as well, that they're in a community that really appreciates who they are and what they've done.
I mean, I've been a sports writer for 25 years, and I've met a lot of famous athletes and stuff, but I've probably interviewed everybody in the paddock by now, but are all the drivers. But it's still a real kick for me to interview drivers and just to talk to them. And I think
that's one of the things about motorsports is that, you know, even though you get more used to seeing all the drivers, like, there's still that little kid inside of you that's like, okay, I just talked to Scott Dixon. I just talked to Ari Lein. Yeah. Like, that was cool. You know, and I feel like everybody who works in motorsports still has that little kid inside of them. So we all get it. It's like, you're like, I'm going to be uncool for just a minute.
Yeah.
Well, last year, I guess I'll call him a unicorn. TK was one of my unicorns. I'd never interviewed him.
Right.
Never got a picture of him. Never got an autograph. So I finally did an interview with him. And I mean, after I finished, I did two things after I finished. I turned the recorder off and I said, I'm done as a reporter, just as a fan. Thank you for everything you've done.
Right.
Thank you for what you do for the Indy 500, blah, blah, blah. And then the second thing I did is I went and called my wife and I was like, that was just one of the coolest things I've ever done.
Yeah.
You know, and it is just to that racing, you know, family and everything is different. And that's what makes this place so special to all of us. Right.
Agreed. And the drivers go out of their way to make it, they know.
They do. They absolutely know.
That this is the fans are what created this event and continue to sustain it. Fans don't show up. It's 500 miles on a little piece of asphalt, right?
Well, it was 4 years ago,
which was terrible. We don't ever want to do that again. But
yeah,
no, we're fortunate to have the drivers who we do for sure. And I'm excited that TK lives in our market because it's a bummer to not have him in a car, but it's awesome to have him here. I mean, he'll do anything you ask to help promote him. He's just a fantastic person, and I'm just so glad that he and Lauren and the gang are here.
Yeah. All right. Well, I know you got
to
go.
I'm off to the next thing.
But I'm going to make a pick. Who do you think is going to be the champion this year?
And why is it going to be Alex Blow?
Oh, man. I don't know.
You can pick 500 or series.
A series, I have no idea right now. I mean, we just haven't had enough races for me to
even have an idea.
Predict.
I know, that's why it's fun to guess that.
I don't know. I feel like it's gonna be one of the Penske guys again on the series. I guess we'll see there. And it feels like a Chevy right now for the 500, just based on the half a day of oval open test we had. But that's pretty premature. But it feels to me like it's gonna have to become somebody from the Chevy camp. But the Arrow McLaren guys are pretty strong. I kind of have a feeling they're gonna.
Be nice to see McClay in the winner's circle.
It would be very, especially 50th anniversary. That was the last time one was there.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome.
It would be pretty cool. But whoever it is,
side by sides of those cars.
Whoever it is, I'm looking forward to just a bunch of excitement in Victory Lane and celebrating, and then we could spend a year together promoting the 109th running.
I bet. Awesome. Well, Doug, thank you so much.
President's Day.
Happy President's Day, belated. Happy early May.
Yes.
We'll be seeing a lot of you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks for listening. Bye.